ever wonder what other people think about the profession of occupational therapy? Especially those who are close to us, like our friends and family, who hear us talk about OT all day long? Well, today, I'm bringing on a few previous podcast guests who all eat, breathe, and sleep OT, just like me. And I'm also bringing on their spouses to have a conversation about the profession of occupational therapy coming from the lens of our other halves. So on the show today, we have Danielle DiLorenzo and her husband, Chris, Miranda Donnelly and her husband, Sean, Laura Pettix and her husband, Mark. And rounding out the panel, I have my husband and other half, Ray Putt. If you happen to have missed Danielle, Miranda, or Laura on their previous episodes, I have linked to each of them in the show notes, so be sure to check those out to hear more about their stories. But today, we're focusing on the other half of occupational therapy. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah Putt. I've been an occupational therapist since 2009, specializing in early intervention and also run my own private practice in this setting. Welcome to OT for Life. Today, I've got an extra special episode, and actually, I think this is the most people I've ever had on the podcast before, which is really exciting. And I brought you all on today to really just kind of dive into the other halves of occupational therapy and what they think about our profession. I know my husband hears about occupational therapy all day, every day, all year long. And so I just wanted to kind of take some time and chat with some other OT spouses and get their take. So let's introduce everybody. First off, I've got Danielle and Chris DiLorenzo. You might recognize Danielle from episode 51. How are you both doing today?
We are doing good.
Doing great.
And I've got Miranda and Sean Donnelly. And Miranda was on episode 34 of my podcast. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
And also joining us, we have Laura and Mark Pettix. And you guessed it, Laura was also previously on the show, episode 48. And I'm excited to have both of you here. How's it going?
Hey, we're good.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having us.
And lastly, I have my other half and my hubby, Ray Putt. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So let's just jump right into it. And I'm going to ask the age-old question, what is occupational therapy? This is a question that even a lot of OT practitioners still kind of struggle with answering. So I'm just going to throw it out there to the boys and get your definition. So Mark, I'm going to you first. How do you define occupational therapy?
I would define occupational therapy. The first thing I would say about it is the field in which my better half has kind of dedicated her life's work towards. So that is literally the first thing I think of when I think of the phrase occupational therapy. But for the practice itself, at one point, it was told to me that it's similar to physical therapy, but there's a hard but there. And like, I'm seeing your guys' reaction. So like my answer is changing as you guys are reacting. But it's a little bit more than that in terms of being focused in a sense of focusing on things, activities that are actually functional in your kind of day-to-day life, things that you would actually use in practice, whether it's going to the grocery store or doing just your everyday kind of task and errands or whatnot. And I'm going to hard stop right there because I got a couple other fellas on this. And I'm not going to do more than that because I saw some light nods. So I'm going to kick it over to one of my other associates.
All right, Chris, what you got?
Well, I will start off with 8 years ago when we started dating and I found out she was an occupational therapist. Yes, I thought she helped people find jobs. So, you know, I put two and two together. It sounded right to me, but I have learned much in 8 years. And I do know that it is trying to help people get the most out of their lives and be as independent as possible. And, you know, just helping people figure out what works for them so that they can, like I said, have the most out of what they are doing.
Okay, Sean, I know it's going to get harder the more the people say, but I'm throwing it to you. What can you add?
Yeah, I guess keeping it short and sweet, my answer might be a little simplistic here, but really when I think of OT, I think of people helping others to do the things that matter to them.
I approve.
Good answer.
Approved. Approved.
All right. I just want to say the reaction is this is turning into the newlywed game really quick. I promise you, I'm a competitive dude. Let's go.
Bring it. Okay.
So, yeah. So every time somebody asks me, I always say it's, then again, you'll shoot me, but I always say it's similar to physical therapy. But the example that I always use is, if you blow your knee, a physical therapist builds strength around your knee, while an occupational therapist helps you get back on your feet walking, right? So it's more of a functionality as opposed to a strength building practice. And I know you guys hate that analogy, but for a layperson, it tends to resonate with them because they understand it. And so that's an easy way for me to get the point across, is what you guys actually do.
There's a big reason that I don't like it when people start by saying that it's like physical therapy. And we have had numerous conversations about this. And I'm like, you can't say that. If you say that, then automatically people assume that we are PT or we are just like PT. And that's like my biggest pet peeve, where I'm like, when you set the preface of that, it's like, that's where we always kind of get shoved into that bubble. Okay, ladies, what do you think? How did the guys do?
I think they did good.
They did good.
I think really they must good. Listen to us sometimes.
Maybe.
Probably.
I agree, Miranda.
It really like seeps into their brain. I don't know how they can not hear it.
I mean, it's just in the subconscious at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it constantly. I mean, between this podcast and all that other stuff, right? I mean, you hear about it constantly. And every time you say, oh, how was your day? Well, then there you go, right? So.
Yeah, pretty much. Hmm. So, Chris, you did not know about OT before you met Danielle.
No.
What about the others? Had you heard about occupational therapy? Did you know what it was before you met your spouse?
No, I could say I did not. I had no idea. No clue.
Well, I didn't even know what it was when we met. So that's kind of hard too.
Well, spoiler alert on my end.
I literally did not find out about it until I applied to, like, 6 months before I applied to grad school. So
it's a hard no, but I did know about physical therapy.
Yeah.
Just from, you know, playing sports when I was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah, my sister actually is an OT. So I did hear about OT a little bit before I met Miranda.
And she and I were actually in OT school at the same time, but we didn't know each other. So I actually met Sean before I met his sister, we were in the same hallway like every single day, but I met him first.
Wow. What a small world.
I love that. Everyone's slightly different here. Like, that's awesome. That's fantastic. So honest transparency here. Don't look at me like that. How much time does your spouse spend doing things related to occupational therapy? Whether it's reading, writing, podcasting, talking with OTs, you name it. How much time per day, per week?
We're still on the clock. We probably started around last Sunday.
Does it ever stop?
It hasn't really stopped. When was the launch date of the OT Butterfly?
Yeah, that was. I think even before that,
but like ever since the OT Butterfly.
But really being in the online space of it, it's just like other level that just like appeared in my brain.
Right.
Yeah. I think that online level just adds so much to it. Of like, Miranda was in that clinical setting for a little while before she went back for her PhD. And that was like a normal, hey, how's your day going? And then with the podcast picking up and just doing a lot more, I think with social media, it becomes just a much more all-encompassing thing. It's interesting. I feel like one of the cool things about OT is just that it really does relate to so many aspects of life. So it's hard to kind of quantify. It almost feels a little bit like she's always talking about OT.
Because OT is everywhere.
And
it's
everything.
Yeah, no, I'd say the same thing. I mean, we talk about it a lot, and I think I'll echo a lot of what you guys said is when Sarah started her practice and then this podcast, it just became a part of our life and it's constant. And the other part about it is I think it's hard, and maybe you girls can chime in on this, but I think it's hard to detach from the type of work that you guys do. So I think it is all encompassing. I mean, I like for me, I know I can leave the office and just kind of leave it there, but it's not as emotionally draining. It's not as emotionally taxing. So I think that stays with you a little bit longer.
I think also for Danielle and I being moms and pediatric OTs, I feel like it would be different, you know, if we were in the medical setting or working with adults and then coming home and having kids, but it's just constantly in front of our faces. And then both of our kids benefit from our knowledge and our OT, and we can't take out the OT filter. So it just, the OT and mom hat is like molded at this point.
So I got an interesting question for you then, for Chris and Mark. Has it applied to you? Have you learned things while you deal with in your own situation?
Oh, yeah. I'm learning something new about our son from her every single day. Again, I have a job where I go, I leave, doesn't come home with me. That's it. So then we come home and then I'm with Luke and yeah, I need help. so she definitely helps. Because I wouldn't have been able to figure out any of this stuff on my own.
Yeah, I think to that question, I think to what Laura was saying, I think when you look at our daughter, it's really kind of impossible to turn off, I think, all of the knowledge that she has, you know, when it comes to the things that she studies. And, you know, I think she puts so much time and she invests so much energy in learning these things and obviously taking, you know, her business to new levels and new heights. And with that, I think it's just, you know, like she said, I think it's impossible to turn it off when you're at home. You're constantly in that mindset. You're constantly looking and canvassing for ways to make things better at home for us with our daughter, who clearly has, you know, some things that we work through with her in terms of her temperament and whatnot. And I think that it's been a huge benefit to have her knowledge and her want to do things. Like her, it's crazy. Like she has no chill. Like I'm always giving her a hard time for that. Like I constantly tell her, I'm like, I don't know how you keep going. And she like tries to tell me, she's like, no, you don't understand. This is like my Zen. This is chill to me. And I'm like, we have different definitions of chill. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think in that sense, because she enjoys it so much and there is, you know, a tangible gain for it, just with our daughter, it's awesome to have. And I'm someone who says the more knowledge you have, the better, I think. You know, the more that you're aware of things and you can kind of diagnose things and attack it with a strategy, all the better. So it helps, you know, and it's there. It's not going away anyway. So the fact that it is a beneficial thing, it's not a bad thing.
I also think it's a blessing and a curse, because being an expert in early intervention, childhood development, autism, it can also backfire. So now that we have our own autistic son who also has a brain injury, and you have to be able to, Laura and I have talked about this a lot. Like sometimes I just want to shut down, but you're right, Mark, you can't shut it off. Like no matter how hard you want to shut it off, gleaming bits of the therapeutic process shine through in my motherhood. But I think one of the things that Chris has helped me is just be mom at times. And I think during that whole diagnosis process, he always just looked at Luke like a typically developing kid. And I was always looking at him like, no, like this is not okay. Like, and I think that kept a really beautiful grounded foundation of when we did, you know, have to move forward and know like, okay, like we have an autistic son, like he has high sensory needs. And even when he went through his bouts of self-injurious behavior, like we had to work together, which is where I used to say that I didn't ask to be in this position. But my goodness, am I so thankful that I have the profession that I have, because Luke has made such gains because I'm able to help provide him with those supports and services that he needs and, you know, help Chris and everyone in our lives see Luke to be listened to in a different way, in a different perspective. I used to think of it as like, yeah, okay, everyone be like, oh, you're so lucky. This is perfect for you. And it's like, but I am, like, I truly am thankful, because all that matters is him and that people get to see how amazing he is, but he's only going to do that if the right supports are in place for him.
Right. I think just to your point, and I know, you know, Laura said this before, is because of what she does, you know, to not have early intervention and potentially miss the chance to be there to steer things in another way. She said, you know, she's told me she would never forgive herself for that in that sense. And I think that's to your point, is it doesn't turn off. And it's because she knows she is a wealth of knowledge that there is that kind of dynamic, right? Where she's going to be looking almost at times obsessively, but, you know, at the same time, I appreciate her for it, because I can't bring that kind of energy the way she does. And I acknowledge that. And I just try to balance her out, you know, when best possible, because there are times when, I think, like you said, it could be to your detriment as well. And I think I got to bring a reeler back in at times, because we can't live in that zone the entire time, or else we're just not going to make it. So I think that's why we complement each other so well.
I think since like 6 months, Danielle's been running interventions on Luke. So I was able to learn a lot from her, and we were able to just keep Luke on a nice path where, yeah, he's probably in a much better position than he would have been if Danielle did not do what she does. Because I have, again, I wouldn't have known any of this.
Yeah, but you're a great dad. You're just naturally a good dad. And I feel like, Mark, so are you. Like, and when you're naturally a good dad, like, yes, you have like awesome OT wives, but if you're not naturally like that just organically flowing dad and just open to what we would have to say, it would be totally different. And our kids are so lucky to have the types of families that they have, because we all know as therapists in early intervention and pediatrics, when our parents are on board and when they're there for follow through of strategies, we see the most success and progress because we're empowering the caregivers. So kudos to you guys too, because we can't do it without our better halves too, you know?
We need our other halves, right?
Very true.
And I think too, I mean, you guys were just kind of talking about it from the parent and therapist lens, but for the four of us that don't have kids, I don't shut my OT brain off either. So I can only imagine that, like, once you have a kid, especially being a pediatric OT, woo.
It's horrible.
It's never, ever going to turn off. So my husband kind of asked what people had learned by having kids about OT. So I'm going to redirect it back to my husband, Ray. What have you learned through having me as a wife, occupational therapist, business owner, you know, never turning off that OT brain? What are some things that stick out to you?
Well, you're famous amongst your students for your crawling speech. So that one, I think, was really eye-opening for me, and I never really put two and two together there. But I constantly kind of, as we talk about things and you talk about cases and you talk about situations and what have you, I find myself constantly, I guess, enlightened is the word I'm looking for, about certain situations. For instance, like nonverbal kids, right? Like up until I met you, to me, it meant like, oh, that kid just doesn't know how to talk. But then as we've talked through things, it's like, well, wait a minute, like I can't dance, right? So there's some coordination there that just doesn't match up. It doesn't mean that there's something necessarily wrong. It's just there's some coordination. And so, and I know that's kind of a naive way of looking at it, but it kind of resonated and it made sense. It finally like clicked. Like there were things that started clicking by being exposed to what you do. And that to me, I think is really interesting. So you start looking at people and looking at the world a little bit differently.
Yeah. I was thinking as you were saying that it's so true that just the perspective that an OT has, that just opens up your eyes to see the world a little bit through their lens. And I think that really, in a lot of ways, just getting that little bit of perspective can really lead to a whole lot of new compassion. Being able to see people who before maybe you would have just not even had a second thought pass through your brain, but now you see them and you know a little bit more about what's going on with them and their life and the way that they're interacting with the world. And just having that little bit of extra perspective, I think, helps to connect with others a little bit more.
Is there, because I know the original question was directed to Chris and Mark about having kids and what you have learned, but is there anything outside of just the kid part that you have learned from being exposed to occupational therapy that has resonated with you or has kind of changed your perspective, changed your thinking?
One thing that I've come to appreciate over the years, especially when Laura was working in a facility when we were still living in the Bay Area, but the kids that she would work with, because we were, you know, fortunate to be there for a little bit of time. She was there for a couple of years. Like the gains that they would make and like the development milestones that they would hit, it was really eye-opening, I think, to me, seeing how much occupational therapy like impacted an entire family, in the sense that, you know what I mean? Like around the holidays, she'd be getting, you know, showered with thank you cards and a bunch of these kind of warm notes that said like, oh my gosh, he's eating, you know, this fruit that he's never tried before, or he's, you know, engaging in a way that like he just was not able to do until he was able to see you. So I think just seeing that like over time, it makes you appreciate, you know, the difference that I think you're making in not only in children for who she was working with at the time at the facility, but like just for their families. And, you know, working in an industry where I'm in sports media. So I'm in like the sandbox of like the industries. Like I get to do things that are incredibly fun, but you know, I see the difference that she makes in like families' lives, and that's what occupational therapy has begun to mean. You know, that's what it's starting to stand for to me, is that the difference she's making, like it's eye-opening to me that this is the person that I've been with for like a dozen years, and to see her affect change in people in this way, it's really cool.
I think from listening to Danielle, it's actually helped me a lot in my job, because I do CAT scans and I have patients, you know, across the spectrum of ages, and in some in not very good shape, and you know, some people who just walk on in and everything's fine. So it's just from listening to what she does, it kind of has made me think differently when I'm trying to help somebody out who definitely cannot help themselves or me with it, just getting them even in the room. So it's definitely made my job much easier now that I think about all these things instead of just like, let's go.
Yeah. And also they would call you in for when there were autistic kids and kids that had disabilities, because Chris was always so great and knew what to do with them, because I guess he was listening to me. And then he would apply that at work, which I think that that's so another awesome thing about OT is, you know, me and I always joke at work, everybody can be OT'd. Anyone can learn how to do occupational therapy techniques and it can benefit their lives. So imagine how many people you were able to get x-rayed and you don't know where those results are going. You don't know what part of their healthcare process it was, but you helped make it a better one rather than one that, you know, can often be looked at as traumatic for parents of autistic individuals and other disabilities trying to get healthcare services. So I think that's a really awesome thing.
Yes. Instead of, I do work with people when they find out what a patient and they might be autistic or something along those lines, they're just like, I don't feel like doing this. And it's like, and I get it, because yes, it definitely doesn't make our jobs easier, but I've been able to take some of the things I've learned from Danielle and use that to do my job at a much better ability than I probably would have.
And Sean, you are not in healthcare, right?
Not at all. Yeah, I program things for a living.
So have you noticed anything about OT, and can you apply OT to your job? Has it changed anything about how you interact with people or anything like that?
Yeah, I can definitely say that it has. Trying to think of specific examples of it is a little difficult, but I feel like it kind of comes back a little bit to what I was mentioning earlier about just having that extra perspective, just having that different lens to look through. Being a little bit on the stereotypical computer nerd side of things, social interactions have always been a little strange for me. So just, I think having just that extra understanding of what other people are going through, connecting with them a little bit more, I think there's been sort of that side of OT and just appreciating the person for who they are as they are. And then there's also been just some of the like little more functional things of, I think between both Miranda and my sister, just always kind of harping on there's always a way to do something. And so, you know, sometimes there's been like some minor injury that I've had and just knowing like, oh, okay, like maybe I can't reach up all the way right now, but there's another way to go about doing the task that's at hand. And that's been helpful sometimes for myself and also for coworkers. So it's just like those little things, I guess, that kind of come up on both sides of the spectrum there.
I think it's been fun too, to see how, especially recently, how our scopes of practice in totally different industries have started to kind of overlap. And that's been really fun, because prior to starting a podcast, I was like barely know how to use a computer. I mean, truly, I was not tech savvy at all. And then I was like, let me just start a podcast. That's what not tech savvy people do. Sarah knows this. And it's been interesting just through that. And then also through the research I'm involved in more technology-based interventions and lifestyle technologies, just to see how our worlds are overlapping and just how complementary our skill sets are. So it's been definitely, you know, if we're going with the whole other halves theme, like I really see that our skills and our industries and our interests are so complementary. And I feel like we learn from each other all the time.
I think I can definitely agree to that, because my husband is not in healthcare and not like in that type of industry at all. Like speaking of computers and tech and all that language, that, I mean, it's another language for me. I don't know much besides like what he tells me. And it's still like in one ear and I'm like, what is he talking about? I don't know. That's a lot of numbers. I'm not sure. But I think, Miranda, you're so right. There's so much about what he does and then what I do that really kind of like complements itself. And especially starting the podcast and all of that, like, hey, tech guy, I got my tech guy right here. And he's been a big help with that. But now I'm going to go to you, Ray. What about your job and OT and any kind of intersectionality about that?
I'll echo what Sean said is there is an element of perspective that comes along with it. Being in tech, I'm sure we deal with all sorts of odd people. And so having a little bit of perspective in that regard, it helps you be a little bit more patient. But I think it's increased my patience, although I still have a long way to go with that, I think.
You made progress.
Yeah.
You made progress.
I appreciate you, Ray.
When you have one person who's extremely patient and one that's not, it slowly after
yeah, long time.
6.5 years of being yeah. married and eat together or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. slowly rubbing off over there.
Yeah.
I feel like I have to say that the one of the things that we have in common, Mark and I, with our professions, is that something we both can't turn off because he works in sports. He programs NBA TV. So whenever he's watching sports, he's always thinking about who put that on and why it's like he has the reasoning why behind it goes on. So obviously his brain doesn't turn off, but I definitely had to call in on his skills because no matter what, I still don't know anything about sports. He's absorbing a lot of OT stuff, but I know less about sports every year. But I had a client who was extremely obsessed with like statistics of basketball and football. And so I was trying to get him involved with something. And so I would always ask him, I'm like, I'm trying to make a game about football. Give me like some, how do you score and this? So I would always call him. I'm like, who won this game? And so I would definitely use him to entertain some of my clients. So it definitely benefited both ways.
Just here to answer the tough questions. You know what I mean? Is a touchdown in football or is it in basketball again? Come on.
So I have to ask, do you guys ever get sick of your spouse talking about OT?
I want to jump right back in there since we just had the mic. No, I do not. And it's for the reason kind of leaning on what Laura just said is that I don't get sick of her speaking and kind of engaging with it because I see the passion that she has for it. And it's funny because, you know, she was just mentioning my kind of love and my dedication for sports. That's kind of the career path I chose. That's what I have my master's degree in, sports management. So like, I knew that that's what I wanted to be in. And we've been together long enough to where, you know, it's fortunate we've seen each other kind of grow over the years. And I always knew that I wanted to take that path. And like she had mentioned, you know, when we first met, OT wasn't even a thing to her. So for me to see her kind of discover something in the course of our relationship and then now take it to where it's at for her on a day-to-day, like I was always joking with her. She'll never be obsessed with something the way that I am with like fantasy football or like pickup basketball, right? Like those are like my two go-to analogies for her. It's like there's nothing that was her equivalent. And like I feel like that until she found OT. Now she is like in her phone, looking and, you know, managing her OT Butterfly business and her, you know, IG handle and her website and all that stuff in the way that I'm managing my fantasy team every Sunday morning. So it took a dozen years, but we got there. Like she found her passion and like she breathes it. And for someone who has a similar passion in an entirely different field, but feels the same way, like you admire that to the fullest. And that's why it doesn't make me sick when I see her bust out of the room, run like around the corner, like, oh my gosh, like I just found out this really cool sensory activity that Liliana could do. And I'm like, babe, it's like the second hour of Red Zone Channel right now. That sounds phenomenal. Like, go team. But like, in all honesty, she brings that energy of excitement that it like blows my mind that you're that hyped about it. But she is. And when someone feels that way about what they do, like you can't help but admire it.
You just gave me an idea. I think we need to have a fantasy OTIG league here.
How would that like, work? That like you definitely have to recruit him for like, to come up yeah. with the we'll structure and the rules for that. That would be really fun. Guys, and make it like a giveaway, like a really cool like giveaway
go.
Fantasy thing. That would be really fun. I don't know how you would collect points on that.
We'll figure
cool.
it out.
Wait, bring it on. Bring it
That'd
on.
Be really cool.
Let's go.
What about you, Sean? Do you ever get sick of Miranda talking about OT? And I'm guessing because she's doing her PhD, she is deep in research too. So that's like a whole nother level there. So I want to know.
You might want to rephrase the question if he ever gets tired of hearing me talk.
And we're done.
No. Yeah. So I think honestly, I'm no more sick of hearing about OT than she probably is about hearing about software on a daily basis. You know, it just kind of depends on the day. One of us is a little more talkative. And I feel like it's usually really interesting discussion. As we kind of mentioned earlier, our career fields are really just intersecting quite a lot lately. And so that's been really cool to just see where there are those parallels and talk about those and dig into those a little bit more. So overall, I think I really enjoy the conversations we have, but there is sometimes where I do get a little bit annoyed, and that's the amount of acronyms that are used completely out of context. My sister's actually a worse culprit than Miranda is with this, but it is so much jargon sometimes where I'm like, that's about two paragraphs worth of words that were just condensed down into acronyms, and I could use a little bit of context here, not being in the health professions, but
just completely lost. And like the two of them are having a conversation and you're like, what is this?
Yeah. It's like, I know the alphabet was in there a couple of times, but I really don't know what we're talking about.
Okay, Ray.
I'll echo Sean. Like, it seems to me that like, I really do enjoy talking about this stuff and learning it because I think it's fascinating. I think it's fascinating the way the human body works. And I think it's fascinating the way all this stuff ties together and those types of things. But yeah, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of jargon, but I guess on the flip side, it has to run both ways, right? So once you're in it, it's the language that you use. And so that part gets a little tiresome because you don't understand half of what's being said. And then there's a lot of like very big words that are used for something that could be relatively simply described. I enjoy it. I think I've learned a lot. I think it's great. But like any other, I guess, married couple, it depends on the day.
That's like when he tries to like explain things in computer talk to me and I'm just like, hello, like I don't speak that language. Like, can you try that again? Right. Like, dumb it down a little bit. I don't understand where you're going with this. So I think we both have to take that time to like talk to the person on that level. Right. Mm-hmm. Like we talk about that in OT all the time. And yeah, it does. It goes both ways.
I never get sick of it. It's just funny because like with what I do, you know, we're out in a store. It's not like I'm like, ooh, I'd CAT scan that. But we could be anywhere. And all of a sudden it's like, you just totally OT, like something that I would have never even thought of.
I think that's going to be the title.
That sounds like a pickup line.
I'd CAT scan that. Yeah, like
we're Danielle can use her profession wherever we go. Mine, I walk out of work and it's just like, and we're done.
So according to the other halves, this is a two-parter here. What do you think the best parts of the profession of occupational therapy are? And what do you think the worst parts or maybe the most difficult parts of our profession?
Like I said, I think the best is that Danielle's always looking at everything like through her profession. And in a lot of times it's extremely beneficial to me also because I would find like the hardest way to do something, whereas she definitely shows me the easiest way. And again, with our son, things like that, it's just always something that is helpful. I just think the hardest part is her job is tough and it never goes away and it's there all the time. It could be, again, I'm actually surprised her phone hasn't been ringing that we've been doing this. There's always someone who needs to contact her or something. So yeah, she never really gets to stop.
I think kind of building on that, probably for my worst part, but the best part first is just the industry as a whole. There's a lot of creative thinking, a lot of outside of the box, and that's just a core component of it. And I think that's amazing and just leads to a lot of really great things coming out of the profession from all different angles. On the worst side of it, all of the paperwork and compliance and things that just don't seem to me, as somebody from the tech industry who's like very privilege to have just a very cushy job, to be quite honest. I'm just always like, oh, these big hospital systems and trying to figure out just government compliance and stuff like that. It always seems too many hoops, too many things are just abstracted away from what's actually helping people. And it leads to so much frustration and people just being taken advantage of on both sides of it, from the people who are providing the care to the people who are receiving the care. And even ultimately the government agencies and other things themselves, like nobody is really winning in the grand scheme of things from all of the processes and paperwork. And so seeing all of that in a couple different settings from people that I know, it always seems like it's kind of missing the mark on what it was intended for.
Preach, husband. That is it.
Efficiency.
Yeah. I think the best part, and I think we touched on this a little bit earlier, but I think the best part about this profession is the way that you guys have an impact on somebody's lives. And you actually like literally make people's lives better, right? Be it a family's life, be it the, you know, old stroke survivor, and you're making their life better, right? You're getting them back to doing something that's meaningful. And it's something that I know I kind of crave in my profession, right? Because you're having that one-on-one impact, and you actually see the impact, you see the progress, and you're making somebody's life better. You are literally, quite literally, making the world a better place. The most difficult part, and it's tough because some of the cases are really, really tough, like really tough. And I think it takes a toll. I really do. And I know you guys talk a lot about compassion fatigue and that kind of stuff. And I think it really honestly does take a toll because it's unbelievable. I mean, some of the cases that Sarah comes home and talks about, I mean, it's gut wrenching. And I've told her this, and I admire her more and more and more as I've gotten into it. But like for her to walk in to a family, I mean, she's in EI and she's literally walking into a family and dealing with the toughest situation that they're dealing with on a daily basis. And she does it time and time again in a single day and walks in and faces the most difficult problem that a family could face and walks in and does it with a smile on her face every time. And it's crazy because I couldn't do it. And I think that's really tough because it's just draining. It's really tough.
Yeah, I'll jump in and really it's going to be echoing what I think we're all kind of saying in terms of, I'll start out worst thing, I think, then we can finish with the best thing. But worst thing I would think is, you know, Laura's, I think her natural tendency, you know, to constantly be looking and seeking and wanting to be two steps ahead of everything. It can feed into a little bit of kind of anxiousness at times. And that can be, you know, on a day to day, it can present challenges, like, not going to lie, when you're in the middle of a pandemic and, you know, you're kind of indoors at, you know, long stretches of time and every little kind of sign could be something bigger. You know, I know that it comes from a place of she can't turn off the knowledge that she has in her head. And I remind myself of that. But there are times where it can be tough, you know, just kind of, you know, knowing that that's going to be a consistent kind of edge that you, for lack of a better term, live on. But at the same time, always reminding yourself it's for the greater good. And it comes from a place of caring. And I respect that about her. And I think that kind of dovetails into what the best thing is. And I think it's what we've all said. I think the outpouring of support, the love, the care that you see from the families that, you know, she works with and she impacts and to just see that she's making that much of a difference. Like that's what, you know, really is the best part of this field to me, is that you can really change the world. And I think to take it beyond that with her utilizing social media in the way that she does, it's really opened my eyes to seeing that social media can be used in a way that is entirely not about your own self-image and your own self-interest. It's so of helping other people, and it's used in a way, the way she uses it, it blows my mind. Because again, I come from a world in sports media where we're trying to drive people to watch the next, you know, game, the doubleheader on TNT next Thursday, right? Like that's how we're using social media. We're putting, you know, LeBron James dunk highlights on, and that serves its purpose. We all appreciate that. But at the end of the day, like when you're seeing how she's leveraging social media to have people from different countries reaching out, asking her to speak on this topic, to share her insights, like to share her knowledge about this space, this discipline, like it blows my mind. Like it really does. And the reach that she has, and it's provided through what occupational therapy is as a platform, it's amazing. And I think that, you know, all of you guys are doing something that makes the world a better place. And we could all use more of that in 2020.
I think that's a really interesting point that you just brought up. And I wasn't even thinking that I'd ask this question, but I think because you brought up the whole social media thing and we're all on social media and put a lot of ourselves out there and a lot of our lives out there. And I would love to get the guys' take on what they perceive as us putting ourselves out there and what that means to them and if anything has changed. Because even today I posted about social media and people constantly are like, I hate social media. There's so much negativity. There's this, there's that. They're always just kind of like putting it down. And I disagree. I love social media. I've met amazing people through social media. So I have this positive spin on it. But I want to know what you guys think about social media and OT, and especially having your spouse kind of putting their lives and your lives, because you're on there too. Like, what does that mean to you?
I'm just going to hang on to the mic one more time since, you know, I was already kind of halfway answering it. I don't want to lose the momentum and I have to start back up again. So to that, I think it's a double-edged sword, to be quite honest. There are, I think we're learning very rapidly as her profile is growing in this space and she's dedicating more time to it. You know, it becomes, you know, an extension of what our everyday life is, just taking care of our daughter. And I think there is a fine line to trying to keep some things that are, you know, just to us versus trying to make everything a teachable moment for social media. But at the same time, like I just said, I think the fact that she's using social media in a way that I had never even thought about it being so beneficial to the development and helping others, even virtually, in a time where you don't have the same physical contact that we're so used to, you know, being on lockdown in this pandemic, it really blows my mind. And then the last thing I'll say about that is just the effect it's had on her as a person. Tomorrow is actually going to be our 12-year anniversary from when we first started dating at UC San Diego, college sweethearts. So like I have seen this girl grow into this person that through social media and through this OT butterfly handle, like I was always the extrovert of our relationship. And now she's the one who's got me breaking in on my first podcast on here through her platform. Like that's crazy to me. And that is a full on like testament to her and what this field and this discipline does and the power of social media when you harness it for good and you're not trying to bring negativity to that platform. And that's what the most eye-opening thing is for me personally, is to see it be used for such positivity when there's so much negativity out there. It's really eye-opening.
I think social media is a bit like opiates, right? Where like in the right situation, at the right dosage, it's okay. But anytime it kind of goes over, it can be a real problem. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's, I don't know. I think it's tough. It's hard because I think Mark made a good point that you guys are spreading good, but I do think it, there's a fine line there. And I think it just needs to be watched.
Definitely think in the beginning it was a little awkward, you know, sharing our life like that with people. But because I see how many people it benefits, because again, I'm married to an OT. Our son is autistic. And if it wasn't for her, I don't know where we would be. All these people who follow her, that they're in that boat. So except they don't have somebody. Again, it's one of those things, the benefits definitely outweigh the awkwardness. Again, it's not anything scary. It's just weird.
Also, just want to say that it is a very delicate balance to make sure that Luke is always treated with dignity and respect at all points and times. And before I post things, I always check with him or talk about things that I'm going to post because it's his son too. So it's not just me in control of it. And I literally have to think to myself, would Luke want, if he in 10 years from now, if he looks at this, is he going to feel that his mom treated him with the respect and dignity that he deserves? So it's always in the forefront of my mind for every single post. That's why you won't see me post his meltdowns or post anything like that, because there's moments that are private, like Laura and Mark were talking about that balance, like between us. And then there's moments where we'll be like, oh my God, I want to share this.
Yeah, I think social media is a tool. And just like every other tool, there's a time where there's a good use for it. And there's other times where you're just, it's not the right application. And I think a lot of times, especially in today's day and age, you know, social media is still a relatively new thing and people are overusing it for sure. And I think that my experience with it from what Miranda's been using it for has been that it's something that is really able to bring people together. It's able to connect people. And I've just observed a lot of joy coming from it. And that's, I think, a beautiful thing, because in general, I see a lot of experience with social media being the opposite of that. And it's a lot of hurt. It's a lot of pain. It brings a lot of loneliness and separation. But when I see the way that Miranda's been using it, it's bringing people together. It's finding a reason to connect, to get a little more excited about things and just bring a little more joy into life. And so from that angle, I think it's difficult to find just the right way to use it. And it's always a balance, but I think it's been a really great thing.
All right. So then for the guys, how do you think they could promote OT better? Because we talked about that at the beginning, is how do you define it? And I think there is a little bit of, if you call it a marketing or branding issue. So what's your opinion on how we could promote that profession better?
It's a really good question.
Yeah.
And it's not the same as physical therapy.
Just that it's not about
throwing that
jobs.
One out there, Ray. Yes.
So we all were wrong right at the beginning. Good.
It's just a crazy thing. Like I said, until Danielle and I started dating, I had never even heard of this. And I am not the only person who never heard of this field until they met somebody who was in it. It's just not something that's like out there that people know about. And again, everybody does know about physical therapists. You've heard about it in some aspect. So I just think people need to learn that it's actually a thing, because unless you need it, you don't know about it. And that's where I wouldn't even know how to begin getting that out there to people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of tough because from my experience, it's been very much OT is something where you kind of feel it more than you know it. That's kind of how I've seen it so far through my sister and through Miranda, is like, there's not a way for me to have just this like tagline that this is what OT is. There's no official one-liner that summarizes it, but you kind of, you know it when you see it. And I think just finding a way to skip past those comparisons and analogies and figure out the acronyms. How do you just get to that point where you're able to simply distill the essence of it? I mean, that's a million-dollar question. But I think it's when you can find that really simplified way of just conveying what is so much a feeling of that overall profession, being able to then not start off with, okay, well, what do you know? Let's now try to build from there. It's like, ultimately, it's not like OT is some crazy derivation of rocket science. It's not like you need to have some particular formula to say, okay, now I see it. Like, it's very human. And when you see it, you know it, and it makes sense because it's so focused on the person. And so it's finding some way to just summarize that quickly.
Yeah, I think I think you hit the nail on the head. Is branding is having a term occupy a singular idea. And what I've learned about OT over the last 8 or so years is it's so all-encompassing, it's hard to brand, right? Because it can be somebody working in feeding, or it can be somebody working in mental health. I think it's great that all of you can have your fingers in all these different things and understand the basics of all these different things and be experts in all these different fields. But it's really hard to explain that and promote it, because it's very difficult for people to grasp on to a very broad idea. Because there's that great saying in branding, right? If you're something for everybody, you're nothing for everybody, right? So because you can't grasp on to it, there's no singular idea that you can grasp on to. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what that is, but I think I would challenge you as OTs to think about it and see, because you are in a beautiful profession. And the more and more I'm exposed to it, the more I appreciate it and all of it. But I think it's really difficult messaging that you guys have, that when you get out there, you know, you should be right up next to physical therapists. There's no reason why you shouldn't be. But I think because physical therapists have that very easy, oh, I go there after an injury to recover, right? Like, there you go. The end, right? Like, it's really easy to understand.
Well, I think that's been the age-old question in occupational therapy since its inception. Like, who are we? What do we do? And why do we have such a hard time defining who we are within our profession as a whole? And I think that's because everybody is defining it just a little bit differently, or a little bit within their own scope of practice. But, you know, when you look at our slogan, helping living life to the fullest, right? But what does that exactly mean? Like, what are we doing? You know, we're experts in task analysis. We are in the process of knocking down those barriers and figuring out and breaking down tasks when individuals have disability, illness, and we're trying to figure out after these things have happened, like, how can we get you back to doing the things that you love? But since the things that you love are so individualized and unique to everybody that you work with, that's why it looks so different in all the different settings. And I think that's what makes it so specifically hard to brand, because it's almost like you have to brand all of it all at once. But that is so uniquely different within each profession, and it means something different to each individual, because we are a client-centered profession, probably the only client-centered profession where we literally take the client, what's meaningful to them after they have sustained something that impacts their independence and functionality. And then we, regardless of what we think they need, we listen to what they need. And then we provide the supports and strategies to help them get back to doing the things that they love, AKA living their life to the fullest.
We just got to shorten that into a tagline, you know?
Right? Like, how do we do that? How do you do that? Like,
concise, Danielle, come on.
But it's also not just that the activities and the occupations and the things that we're working on with our clients is diverse. It's also that everybody that comes to us, however their disability, their illness, whatever their reason that they're coming to see us, that is also so diverse. And yes, you could work with five people who have had a stroke, and every single intervention could be 100% different than the next. So, like, across the board, we just have so much diversity in activities, in illness, disability, whatever happens. Like, yeah, I don't know. Danielle, we're going to have to work on that conciseness.
I think too, one other thing, I know you asked the guys, but
yeah, jump in.
You know, we've talked about why maybe some other professions are really much better at marketing themselves. Well, I also think about what words are involved in their profession name. I mean, speech language pathology. We know those words. We know what physical means. We know what nursing is. I mean, all these other professions that we work with, their names make a lot of sense in the current vocabulary. And the word occupation made a lot of sense in 1917. And I still stand by it. But I don't think the average person uses that word the same way as they did when our profession was founded. And so I think we have that extra obstacle, but I don't think that's an excuse for us not to have good branding. I think it's just something we've got to roll with and figure out how to spread that. I think once people know what occupation can mean, the work will be kind of behind us.
The really interesting part about the word occupation, and I picked this up when I went to the World Federation of Occupational Therapists conference in Cape Town, South Africa, is that in some other language, the word occupation actually doesn't exist. So when you have OTs, but they happen to be in a country where the word occupation doesn't exist, they have to change it to ergotherapist or like some other variation of it. So now all of a sudden it opens it up to like, well, are you all OTs? Is that all the same thing? So there has been a big push to actually change the title of occupational therapy. But I agree with you, Miranda. Like, I think it's up to us to define it and really represent it within society and help people understand that an occupation is not only your job. There's so many other things that fall into that role of occupation. But it is one of those topics that really just kind of comes up time and time again about why is it so difficult for people to understand what occupational therapy is. So I have one last question for the group here. And there's been a lot of words. There's been a lot of conversation, a lot of discussion around occupational therapy and what it means, what it is, how we can be better about promoting it. But if you only had one word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
I had this. I'm going to go with resilient, both for yourselves and for what you're doing with the people you're working with. Yeah, I thought that was good when I came up with that earlier.
I did too. When he said it, I was like, ooh, Sarah's going to like that.
So I'm sorry for jumping in so I didn't lose that one.
Staking the claim. Nobody else can say resilience.
But I think that is a very good way to look, like I said, both at what you guys are doing and what you are helping other people do.
Pressure's on.
Yeah. There we go.
Both of you guys.
I feel like just thinking back on some of the themes that have come up in conversation so far, perspective, I think, is the word that I'm going to go with. And I think that the reason that's coming to mind is with so many other professions, whether we're talking in the health professions or not, there is a particular perspective that you have and you just approach your work that way. Whereas with OT, there's this really open-minded component where you're kind of waiting for perspective to walk in. And that person that you're working with, you're taking their perspective and you're applying your knowledge to it. Whereas myself, I go into work and I take the perspective of how to build software in certain ways. And then I just figure out what needs to be done. And then I apply that perspective to the problem space. I'm taking what I know and just applying it there pretty much the same way. Whereas with OT, there's so much variation depending on the perspective that's walking in the door.
So good.
Yeah.
So I think for me, the one word that comes to mind when I think of occupational therapy, try to think of a word that kind of encapsulates all that it provides. So for me, I think the word that comes to mind is benevolent. I say that because it's something that comes from, I think, a place of kindness. And I think a place that you want to improve the livelihood of, whether it's a child or whatever age person you are working with through the discipline. I think it really goes a long way in improving people's livelihood. I think what I've noticed from Laura is seeing the difference that, you know, it makes in people's lives, I think is huge to me. I think it speaks to the person that, you know, they're doing something to improve other people's lives, and they're doing it in a way that, you know, requires them to have a patience level that, like, is foreign to me. And I think that that is something that I appreciate above the many things that it offers, is that it really does offer, you know, an improved life for people. And it shows when strangers feel prompted or feel, you know, encouraged to reach out to Laura and let her know, you know, one of the tactics that she's taught them or shared has gone a long way in improving their day-to-day lives. Like, I just think that that's huge. I think for people to want to pursue that area to make their career and make their profession of it, it says a lot about that person. And I think it says a lot about the people that, you know, occupy that space. So I think, it, you know, just wanting to improve people's livelihoods. And I think, you know, the fact that, you know, working with children to take it to that next level, it's like, that's the next generation. And I think seeing that on a day-to-day basis with our daughter and some of the things that she has sensitivities to that I see Laura work through with her, and it obviously makes an impact in our lives. And to know she's providing that for so many other people, you know, and I think that that's what occupational therapists do, that they're not of themselves. They are inherently unselfish in a way that I can't say that I am personally. This is not probably breaking news, but, like, I just think that it's something that when you're not that, those are the things, the elements of it that I do respect and I appreciate. To me, life is all about relationships, and the relationships that occupational therapists create with their patients, it's a special bond. And you can see it through the support that she gets from the families whose lives she's changed. And I think occupational therapists, the discipline as a whole, should get more respect and more, you know, acknowledgement for the lives that they change. So much inspiration that they bring in terms of, you know, making it better for the next generation. I think that's what it's all about. Benevolent is what I would say.
I have to make sure everyone knows that I did not coach him on that, because, correct me if I'm wrong, that is one of, I mean, this has been a long time, I haven't looked at this book, but the code of ethics that we have and our practice standards, one of them is definitely benevolence or something like that. So that's amazing, babe.
The pressure is really on for Ray here.
Yeah, like, come on, Ray. I mean, I keep coming back to it and it keeps resonating. And I think it's compassion. I really do. You guys would not be in this field if you weren't just full of compassion for other people. And it's a drive to help. And you are trying to get people back to what they are passionate about. And you guys just, I mean, the emphasis is, I mean, you're just so compassionate about other people and trying to help them. And it's, a lot of times it's marginalized people or people that have had injuries or recovering or some sort of diagnosis or what have you. And I think I touched on it earlier. It's like, I don't think of myself as a mean person, but, like, I don't have that in me. Right. And then you guys do. And it's just, you know, it is what it is. Like, it's awe inspiring because I don't know that I could do it and do it with the enthusiasm and the authenticity and the just again, I'm kind of at a loss for words because you guys are just so compassionate. It's impressive. Like, it really is impressive.
I think if I can take anything away from this conversation, it's the importance of our other halves to what we do as OT practitioners and professionals, because this episode really has gone above and beyond anything that I think I could have even imagined of where it would have gone, led to, taken what we would have talked about. And it's absolutely incredible to hear the four of you discuss your perspective, your lens, not even being in the profession, but absorbing whatever it is that your spouse is putting off, telling you, showing you, anything like that. And yeah, I mean, I am totally at a loss for words now too, because this is, it's absolutely incredible. It's really cool to have this discussion from both sides, because I'm so used to just talking to other OT practitioners, other students, and people that are in, like, they're in it, they're in the weeds with us. And I think for me, and I'm very curious, the girls, how you feel now, but it's really interesting to hear them open up about this and really share what they've learned, what they know, and their take on what it is that we do and what we're so passionate about.
When I was on your podcast, when you asked me what my word was, I think my word was everything, if I remember correctly. And listening to Chris and listening to the other spouses, it really is everything. It can be absorbed even when you're not directly OTing the husband per se or the significant other, but just from being around somebody who's in the occupational therapy profession, that's just another amazing thing about OT, because people who aren't in our profession still can help to understand it and identify it in a way that is so relatable, and also continuing to help define what OT is and helps to give us better perspective on what we could do moving forward to almost brand ourselves better and come up with that one line as to what we do, which I think we're all going to have to work on. But it's nice to hear that there is connectedness with our other halves within our profession, because I don't think it is always like that with other professions. And it's nice to hear that all of the guys really do have an understanding of occupational therapy and how it can relate in a variety of ways and settings and within their own lives.
I think my first reaction to this conversation is that, like Mark said earlier, if we're playing the newlyweds game, we all win. We did great. The guys really knew their stuff. And I think that just shows that they listen really well, first of all, and they actually understand what we're saying, which is shocking because we say a lot.
We just talk too much.
Well, that is, that's for certain. But the fact that they absorb so much is quite impressive. I also think that a theme of this conversation has been that our jobs, as rewarding as they are also kind of exhausting. Perfectly candid, there's part of the reason why I'm pursuing a PhD is so I can infuse research into my life, which is exhausting in its own ways. But regardless, our profession is kind of consuming. We live it, we love it. And no matter what area of practice or research or education that we are in, we really, you know, it just takes up so much of our lives in the best of ways. And so to know that we have partners in life that are supportive and are hearing us and are listening to us. And as Danielle said, giving us feedback. And it's always a conversation we can be continuing at home, which helps us become better therapists. And it's cool to hear that it helps them too. It's just an added bonus. But I think that's been really cool to see that we have those supports. I think in a profession where it can be all consuming, we really need that. And we need those supports outside of our job. And I think it's good to hear we have at least four of them.
Well, and also kind of going back to the whole, like, how do we promote the profession better? What better way than explaining it to our other halves, our spouses, our friends, and then they going out. And then when they have a better understanding of what it is, they share with other people what it is. And all of a sudden, it's just this like trickle down effect that everybody gets it. Everyone starts to get that better understanding. So if we can convey it to the people in our lives and in our circles, and then they can take that. And when somebody's like, oh, well, what does your spouse do? Oh, she's an occupational therapist. This is what it is. Bam. Right. It's just like explosion right there. And it's going to be amazing. So whew, this has been unreal. Like I said, like, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to get out of this conversation. And there's so much. There's so much, I think, more that we could even be saying here. But I just wanted to say thank you to everybody that came on today, taking the time out of their busy schedules, because I know we are all ridiculously busy and trying to coordinate 8 people to get them on the show today. Had its own challenges, but we made it work and we're here. And I really think that a lot of what we talked about today is just going to resonate across the board with anybody that will listen to this episode. So thank you to Miranda and Sean for coming on the show. I really enjoyed having you guys here.
Thank you. This was really fun. I always love connecting with other OTs and their spouses and just getting more connected. That's part of why we all do what we do. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And if anybody wants to reach out to you guys or get in contact with you, how can they do that?
Well, going back to that social media conversation, I am the only one on social media, really. So if you have any questions for me or Sean or want to connect, you can reach out to me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at OT Uncorked, or you can find my podcast wherever you listen to this one.
Maybe we'll get Sean on social media one of these days.
I don't know about it. I have some accounts from when they were first coming out, but
MySpace.
Just can't find time to use them. Yeah, the space books or something is, you know, I haven't been able to figure out how to use it.
All right. And Danielle and Chris, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This was a blast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us. Yes. We loved being a part of this.
It was good. It was our pleasure.
And same question, if people want to reach out to you, how can they get in contact with you?
So they can get in touch with me the best way on Instagram at Mornings with an OT Mom. And if you have any questions for Mornings with Dad here, you can just come to my space, but my Instagram. See what I did there.
That was good. So Laura, Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This was amazing. And yeah, I just, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. This is a really fun thing to do. I don't think we would ever get this chance to do it.
I'm on board whenever you guys want to do it again.
Let's do a round two.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having us. And it was a pleasure.
And if anybody wants to reach out to you or get in contact with either of you, where can they find you?
You can find me at the OT Butterfly on Instagram. And if you want to ask Mark, we call him the OT Bumblebee. Yeah. You can always DM me and ask me a question and I will definitely put him on the spot and have him answer on Instagram stories. But he makes an appearance every once in a while.
I just want to say PSA to my other OT bumblebees out there, aka the significant others of their OT butterflies. If you have any sports related conversation that you happen to have funneling through her, I'm your guy. You know what I mean? Let's go.
And to my husband, thank you, Ray, for coming on the show and sharing your perspective and not making me look too bad, making me look too crazy over here because of how much I eat, breathe, sleep, OT. But thank you. I appreciate it. First time officially being on the podcast.
Yes. Well, thanks for having me and thanks for inviting me. I hope I didn't overstep my bounds too much. But if you want to talk to me, you can reach out to Sarah.
You did good, Ray.
You did do great, Ray. I approve.
We all win. We're all winners here.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you like what you hear, here are 3 easy ways you can help support the show. 1, head over to otforlife.com to find out more about any resources discussed on the show. Remember, that's OT4LYFE.com. 2, share the podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 3, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast player so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. And while you're there, be sure to leave a review saying how much you love the show. Thanks again. I'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
I'm sorry, he pooped. If this is my life, I'm filled with poop all the time.
We babysat our 3-year-old niece last weekend and overnight. We slept with a 3-year-old and I was like, I am at least 3 years away from having a 3-year-old. And that is wonderful.
Yeah, no, to that point, like I'm 3 years away from having a 3-year-old and we have a 3-year-old right now. So it's like,
what?
Said, I feel like I'm still 3 years away from being prepared for having
a 3-year-old. Okay. I know. I was like, wait, are we having another one? Who did you? Whose cherry is being popped?
And what is happening? Congratulations. Yeah, what is going on here? La, la, la,
la. Yes! Ready. I'm massaging my cheek.
Do you guys have wine?
No. What is it? It's brandy. Sarah, I was hoping I could go under the radar with this one, but since it's not a wine glass, but you called me out immediately.
I was like, that does not look like wine. I wonder what that is. Today? Oh my gosh.
Our furnace just turned on.
All right. Literally, as I said today, it turned on. That's okay. I can get rid of it. Oh my goodness.
Hey, by the way, I told you newlywed game, right? Who's winning that?
Best and worst parts. Yeah, we're gonna jive in. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Oh man. You know, I'm afraid to what we're gonna walk into. We just saw our kid put his hand down his back of his pants because now he doesn't fit in onesies anymore.
I think we're good. Don't you guys want kids?
It's so fun. It's so fun. There's one thing that, like, even when I was pregnant, people would be like, oh my God, how amazing. I would be like, it sucks. This is horrible. No one told me this. Everyone's all like, oh, you're glowing. I'm like, what? Like with green? With
you guys are really selling it. Like, so yeah.
Beached whale. Like, no. Truth.
You want me to sell parenting? Walking into your bedroom and finding your 5,000 piece Millennium Falcon Lego set destroyed by your 3-year-old? That was awesome.
We walked in. It was just taken apart. And I was like, oh, dear, honey. Daddy and I spent a really long time putting that together, honey. And he's all like, yay. Like,
not only was it apart, but he was dancing on pieces. Top of it. So it was like a little extra knife step. Oh, it's like,
but parenting's great, guys. I would recommend it to everybody. We would like to sign up for fantasy football. We are fantasy football people. Just saying. Just going to throw that out there. Laura, you have to do this. It's so fun. And this is how you'll really learn about sports. Well,
Mark and Sarah on the panel. Hold on. Let me reiterate. It's been a dozen years. I have not got her to come within a football field of fantasy. So if you guys are able to make that happen, I will see it when I believe it. Trust me.
Oh, we'll make it happen. I love sports. I love football. So,
I know you love football. Yeah, she's the Niners. We're a Cowboys family over here.
It's tough here.
Sorry. It's okay. Mm-hmm.
We're a New York Giants family.
She's a New York Giants family.
I'm a Jets fan. This is a weird household.
It's a rough year all the way around. Wow.
It'll be interesting. It's also fun. Sorry, not to go off on a total tangent because everyone needs to go to live their lives. But
this is life.
OT for life.